Right, so today my title is Years of Shabbat and Yovel. So if we can go to the first slide or second slide, please. In the very beginning, we read Leviticus or Vayikra 25:1-7. Yehovah spoke to Moshe on Mount Sinai and said, "Tell the people of Israel, when you enter the land I'm giving you, the land itself is to observe a Shabbat rest for Yehovah. 6 years you will sow your field, 6 years you will prune your grapevines and gather your produce. But in the seventh year is to be a Shabbat of complete rest for the land. A Shabbat for Yehovah, you will neither sow your field nor prune your grapevines." Next slide. "You are not to harvest what grows by itself from the seeds left by your previous harvest. You are not to gather grapes of your untended vines. It is to be a year of complete rest for the land. But what the land produces during the year of Shabbat will be food for all of you. You, your servant and your maid, your employee, anyone living near you, your livestock and the wild animals in your land. Everything the land produces may be used for food." As I said last week, Sean spoke about the Shabbat day of rest, and the children of Israel were not allowed to work and gather manna on or man on the seventh or the Sabbath day. A double portion of man was given on the sixth day, so they had to trust Yah that he would supply so that they could obey his commands. So if they'd been doing that religiously, then they knew that Yah could provide the double portion. So now, if they got that revelation, Yehovah wants them to get the next one. He wanted them to trust him to supply all of their needs. The man to the children of Israel in those days represents Yeshua's flesh that was the bread of life when it was broken to death. We all know Yeshua died, but we also need the revelation that we died with him. And there is a double portion in that revelation, because two died on the stake. If Yeshua died and we died with him, that's the double portion. And the two are risen and seated on the throne of glory, you and Yeshua. So chapter 25 of Vayikra speaks about Shabbat years, which goes beyond just the Shabbat day. Not only was there a day of rest, but this also speaks of a year of rest. And the rest was not for the people to cease working, although they did stop working, but it was to rest the land. It was for the land to cease working, for the land to replenish itself. In the beginning, in the garden, in a Gan Eden, Yehovah himself planted the garden. It was Yehovah who sowed the fields. Can we go to the next slide, please, in Bereshit chapter 2 and verse 8. It says, "Yehovah Elohim planted a garden towards the east in a den, and there he put the person whom he had formed. Out of the ground Yehovah Elohim caused to grow every tree pleasing in appearance and good for food, including the tree of life in the middle of the garden, and the tree of knowledge of good and evil. A river went out from Eden to water the garden, and from there it divided into four streams." The Ketuvah HaShelekim, or the writings of the apostles, whatever you want to call it, mentions that there are three parts of gaining food. Let's look at the next slide, please, in 1 Corinthians 3 and verse 6. "I planted," this is Paul speaking, "I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, and it was Yehovah who made it grow." The three parts are plant, water, and the increase, giving of the increase by making it grow. Yah did all these three in the Garden of Eden. It was Yah who planted. It was Yah who sent the river to water. And it was Yah who gave the increase, making whatever he planted to grow. Adam did nothing. He didn't do any of these things. It was Yah who did it. In Bereshit chapter 3, verses 17 to 19, it says, "To Adam he said, 'Because you listened to what your wife said and ate from the tree about which I gave you the order you are not to eat from it, the ground is cursed on your account. You will work hard to eat from it as long as you live. It will produce thorns and thistles for you, and you will eat field plants. You will eat bread by the sweat of your forehead till you return to the ground, for you were taken out of it. You are dust, and you will return to dust.'" That only happened because Adam sinned. He now had to plant and water. And the reason he had to plant and water was due to the curse. And work as a result of the curse. If Adam hadn't sinned, none of us would be working today. We wouldn't need to. But we are under a curse. Can we go to the next slide? In Vayikra, Leviticus 25, 19 to 22. It says, the land will yield its produce, and you will eat until you have had enough, and you will live there securely. If you ask, if we aren't allowed to sow seed or harvest what our land produces, what are we going to eat on the seventh year? Then I will order my blessing on you during the sixth year, so the land brings forth enough produce for all 3 years. The eighth year you will sow seed, but eat the old stored produce until the ninth year. That is, until the produce of the eighth year comes in and you will eat the old stored food. And in the next slide, in Malachim 8, 2 Kings 19 to 29, it says, "This will be a sign for you. This year you will eat the grain that grows of itself. The second year you will eat what grows from that. But in the third year you will sow, reap, plant vineyards and eat their fruit." So some people might get a bit worried over not sowing nor pruning in the seventh year. Well, Malachi and I do that in our little sweet potato crop. And it's amazing the amount of harvest that we harvested in the eighth year before we could plant more crop. Because we didn't touch it for a year, we didn't water it, we didn't do anything. And we still harvested over 100 kilograms of sweet potato. We had sweet potato to last us for ages. And I love sweet potato. I make sweet potato soup, and we have sweet potato, baked sweet potato just about every Friday night with our fish. And it's just, I just prefer it to pumpkin. And so the sixth year was so blessed that it was as though the curse was lifted from the earth in that sixth year and was put in the that was put on it in the garden due to sin. So this shows to me a restoration to the state of the world in the time of the Garden of Eden, before man sinned. It brings us to that place before the sin. It is the return of the original condition of things. Like a double portion of man on the sixth day to help them enter the Sabbath day and rest, there was a double portion on the sixth year. We read 3 years because the crops may have been planted and then months go by before the harvest of that same year. So the months before the harvest of the eighth year had to be food from the sixth year as well as the seventh year, The months before the harvest of the eighth year had to be food from the sixth year as well as the seventh year had to be food from the sixth year. So it's actually a double portion, because the harvest spoken was in the autumn of the year before they started. It started after Yom Kippur. So that's the autumn of the year in the Middle East. Then it goes full 12 months, and it's before they can plant again. So it's the first half of the year. It's not until the barley harvest in the March that they get their crop, their first crop. And that's what makes it the two full years. So we need to see this as emphasizing double portions as well. And this adds to our understanding of the double portion revelation. When we really see that we rose with Yeshua and we're seated with Yeshua in heavenly places, we not only enter a period of rest, but we should be resting from our worries and as well as our labours. So we return to the status of Adam before his fall into sin. We are supposed to be have dominion over everything. So we're in the kingdom, or the kings of the kingdom that have dominion over all things. And we are Kohanim, or righteous people, living according to Yehovah's Torah, if we do what Yehovah asks of us. And we have to rest our land for that to happen. With the resting of the land, that means we rest ourselves of hard work, because we no longer have to till the soil, we never have to harvest, we don't have to do those things, so we are getting a rest. So imagine the amazing family time you could have in that period. And being able to spend time teaching the children, being together and doing things that you can't do when you're out in the field working. So it was not just a rest for the field, but to me it's also a uniting of the family and getting them more in tune with Yah, because they've got more time to talk about them and talk about Yah during that time. And a lot of people, all they can seem to do is worry. How are we going to survive? How are we going to eat? What are we going to do? But Yah doesn't want us to worry. In Vayikra, Leviticus 25, 20 to 22. If you ask, if we aren't allowed to sow seed or harvest what our land produces, what are we going to eat for the seventh year? Then I will order my blessing on you during the sixth year, so that the land produces enough produce for all 3 years. The eighth year will be a sow seed, and you will eat the old stored produce until the ninth year. That is, until the produce of the eighth year comes in, and you will eat the old stored food. So people ask, what can they do in times of trouble, when people hassle them, and anything else that usually makes them worry? It's easy. Trust Yah. That's all we've got to do. Let the worries go. Until you have really trust Yah and stop worrying about the very things that make you worry all the time, you never come to that double portion revelation. You really do not believe that you're so seated with Yeshua on the throne in heavenly places over all powers. You are letting the powers of this world affect you too much. And it's the powers of this world that worry you. Once you've received the double portion revelation of the firstborn, you will no longer worry about them. If you truly believe that you're seated with Yeshua over them and all, you have the dominion that you have been promised. Worry tempts all of us when we're faced with a situation that really upsets us. When we feel this is happening, we must remind ourselves of what Yehovah's word says, remembering that Yeshua is the word. And we read quite a bit of it in our readings today. You are seated with Mashiach and have power over all things. So if you really believe you have the power over them, then you walk on into them and face them in confidence that the power that is in you can overcome all things. But if we get defeated before we even face the situations, because instead of trusting what the word says about our power, then we do not even get the chance to use that power. Since instead of confronting the word and that in power, we refuse to and we shrink back in fear. Worrying is refusing to face the situation in calmness, that you will not get upset nor defeated. And that's probably, I'm speaking to myself here than more than anyone else. Malachi can assure you, that is true. I like to be in control of all situations. I can lose it emotionally if I lose the control. It's something I have to constantly work on. I am not a good passenger, so I do all the driving. Malachi's really good. He'll let me drive. But I am the world's worst. I'm all right in the back seat. Don't put me in the front seat of a car as a passenger. Can't do it. So I think I get that from my father. He always had to drive too. We would go long trips as a child when we were in children. We'd drive from Brisbane to Townsville or Brisbane to Melbourne, and I'd sit up and watch every part of where we went, no matter how late at night it was, and the rest of the family were all sleeping, snoring, whatever. And there were seven of us in a little car. But that's just who I am. And I know I have to work on things all the time. But I'm, excuse me. The same applies if you're facing someone who's caused you trouble, and this may be someone that you actually live with. Instead of worrying, you'll get upset again due to the past. You have to confidently confront them, since you believe you have the power to defeat that chance to get upset. Until you get over worrying, that makes you not even try, you will never actually face the situation in confidence. So worrying destroys confidence. And if you do not have confidence, you've never learned anything from the word that says that you have the power over everything in life. And this comes with maturity, I have to add. You can't overcome. The things I can overcome now, I couldn't overcome when I was younger. I suppose I wouldn't have gone through what I'd been through in life if I was able to. But Yahweh allows us to go through situations. And with each situation, we get stronger. So let us stop concentrating upon what people do that is wrong. And you will throw all the responsibility off yourself. That says you need to get to the place where they do not defeat you and you overpower you and put it back on them where it belongs. We've got to look at it. Is it their problem or is it my problem? If it's theirs, they've got to fix it. If it's mine, I can fix it. And I suppose it's something I learnt being married to an alcoholic husband for 18 years, and I learnt the serenity prayer, which says, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I could never change him. No matter how much I tried, I had to learn that I can never change another person. But I can change me. I can change how I think about it. I can change how I react to it. And I have to learn the difference as to whether whose problem it is, and if it's mine, I can change me. I can change my attitude towards that person. I can change the way I feel about something so that it doesn't overpower me and take away my peace and take away my joy. No one has the right to take that from you. And if you've got dominion over all things, nothing can. You can only fix you, how you act, how you think, how you react, and what you do about things. You can never change anybody else. And everyone is responsible for their own actions. We are all judged by our own actions, and we all have to face judgment one day. So don't neglect yourself, and you'll overcome and you'll get your victory. Don't concentrate on what others are doing. And certainly don't worry about what others are thinking about you. That's none of your business. It's between them and Yah. It's got nothing to do with you what they think about you. If you're doing the best you can do, you are doing excellently. The proper perspective is always to look at, we cannot change other people. So we all need to get victory in our lives. And that way, we will always have shalom, we'll always have peace, and we can never get upset. Doesn't mean we won't get upset, but we shouldn't. Losing everything that Adam had before sin is where we are born in this world. Yehovah restored it all through the stake. But Yah needs our faith to help us enjoy all the things that the stake has brought us. People need to realize that they have everything paid for in victory for them by the death of Yeshua HaMashiach on the stake and his resurrection and seated at the right hand of Yehovah the Father. Because he is interceding on your behalf for you to the Father. But unless we change our fearfulness and our doubtful way of thinking, we will never enjoy the benefits. We do not automatically enjoy Yah's blessings. We have enemies to fight in this land, including lies and lying spirits. When we realize we have overcome these, then we can enjoy the blessings. There are a lot of intimidating, opposing and harassing spirits out there. And the more you love Yah, the more you're going to get harassed. The more they'll try and intimidate you, the more lies that will come this way. But we can overcome. Redemption is something many people are unfamiliar with. It is only a word to them in which there is little comprehension. So if we can go to the next slide, please. Vayikra 25:23-28. Yep. It says, the land is not to be sold in perpetuity because the land belongs to me. You are only foreigners and temporary residents with me. Therefore, when you sell your property, you must include the right of redemption. That is, if one becomes poor and sells of his property, to his next of kin can come and buy back what his relative sold. If the seller has no one to redeem it, but becomes rich enough to redeem it himself, he will calculate the number of years the land was sold for, refund the excess to the buyer, and return to his property. If he hasn't sufficient means to get it back himself, then what he sold. Will remain in the hands of the buyer until the year of Yovel. In the Yovel, the buyer will vacate it and the reseller return to the property. Now the Yovel no longer exists today, which is sad, but it doesn't. Yehovah meant for children of Israel to have the land of Canaan, and everyone who owned any land in it were always meant to have it. There is a lesson here of victory for us. When we are spiritually poor in a negative way, then we have had victory but lost it. Something defeated us, but we made us lose our dominion. Yehovah made a way for us always to have what he gave us in salvation. Like the land was always for the children of Israel that he gave to them. The key to this is the right of redemption. You could redeem back your land by paying for it. The land returns to the former owner when it was redeemed. But if you could not pay for it, and no kinfolk do, or no near relative do, watch what it says. There is not only a day of Shabbat, but a year of Shabbat. But there's also a Shabbat of Shabbats. Excuse me. Seven Shabbats is a Shabbat of Shabbats. In Vayikra 25:9-10, it says, "Then on the 10th day of the 7th month on Yom Kippur, you are to sound a blast on the shofar. You are to sound the shofar all through the land, and you are to consecrate the 50th year, proclaiming freedom throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It will be a Yovel for you. You will return everyone to the land he owns, and everyone is to return to his family." Let's continue in the next slide. Vayikra 35-44. "If a member of your family has become poor so that you can't support himself among you, you are to assist him as you would a foreigner or a temporary resident, so that he can continue living with you. Do not charge him interest or otherwise profit from him, but fear your Elohim so that your brother can continue living with you. Do not take interest when you loan him money or take a profit when you sell him food. I am Yehovah your Elohim who brought you out of the land of Egypt in order to give you the land of Canaan and be your Elohim." Excuse me. Next slide. "If a member of your family has become poor among you and sells himself to you, do not make him do the work of a slave. Rather, you are to treat him like an employee or a tenant. He will work for you until the year of Yovel. Then he will leave you, he and his children with him, and return to his family and regain possession of his ancestral land. For they are my slaves whom I brought out of the land of Egypt. Therefore, they are not to be sold as slaves. Do not treat him harshly, but fear your Elohim. Concerning the men and women you may have as slaves, you are to buy men and women slaves from the nations surrounding you." So if the brother enters, the family enters the home, they are to work for you. They are to help, you know, do things for you. But they're not treated as a slave. They're treated more kindly. Slaves were treated harshly. But that doesn't mean they don't do work. They still have to work for you. It's not until the year of your veil that then they're released. In chapter 25 of Vayikra, which I've been covering, teaches us also that a special year of Yovel, or a jubilee year, every 50 years. That is, there's twice in one century. The reason being is that the Yovel year is seven Sabbaths of seven. So it's a 49-year Shabbat. So you've got your normal 7-year Shabbat, so you've got seven of them. And then the Yovel year is the 50th year, the year after the Shabbat year. But Yovel being 50 year is also the first year of the next count. You with me? So the 50th year is also the first year of the next set of 49 or next seven. So that puts two into one century. So Yovel is how the Hebrews described the blasting sound of a shofar or a trumpet. It was during this 50th year everything returned to its original state. Lands and even Israeli people that were sold by the Israelites in time of need returned to their original owners. Note that Yehovah said the land shall not be sold forever. The promised land was never ever meant to be owned by anyone but Yehovah. It was, and he said it, and we read it in the scriptures today. They were just to be tenants in that land. He gave them the land of Canaan, but he would never ever let them lose it unless they disobeyed his word. He actually said it was his land and they were more or less like boarders staying with him. In Vayikra 25:23, please, slide 13. The land is not to be sold in perpetuity because the land belongs to me. You are only foreigners and temporary residents with me. So they couldn't sell it since it was really not theirs to sell anyway. They were only tenants. Yehovah made sure that they would not lose the land by the security of the Yovel and the redemptive purposes of the Yovel. Back at that time, when you were struck with poverty for some reason and you had to sell the land, the buyer had to understand that it would return back to you and your family at the year of Yovel. And so they would not be ruled over with rigor, as the Egyptians ruled over them with rigor. Instead, they were to be regarded as hired servants and would return home in the year of Yovel. So servants and sold land lost due to poverty were all restored to the year of Yovel. Now, when we think of Yeshua, who did he come for? He came for the poor. He didn't come for the rich. He came for the poor. Yeshua picked up on this and he spoke of it in a spiritual sense at the very start of his ministry in Luke 4:14-21, which we read today. Yeshua returned to the Galilee in the power of the Spirit, and reports about him spread throughout the countryside. He taught in their synagogues and everyone respected him. Now when he went to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, on Shabbat he went to the synagogue as usual. Here he stood up to read, and he was given the scroll of the prophet Yeshayahu. Unrolling the scroll, he found the place where it was written. In the next slide, please. The Spirit of Yehovah is upon me, because he has anointed me to announce good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the imprisoned and renewed sight for the blind, to release those who had been crushed, to proclaim the year of favour of Yehovah. After closing the scroll and returning it to the Shemash, he sat down, and the eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fixed on him. He started to speak to them. Today, as you heard it read, the passage of the Tanakh was fulfilled. What was the year of favour of Yehovah? It had to be the year of Yovel, when everything was returned to the owner. That was the statement to me that Yeshua made in reference to Yovel at the very beginning of his ministry. It was then Jehovah's acceptable time for the year of the favor of Jehovah to come. And this statement of Yeshua is actually saying the entire Messianic age is like one long year of Yovel that began when Yeshua came and started ministering on this earth. The gospel, or the good news of redemption, would be preached to the poor. It was the poor who were sold as servants and were sold their lands in the days of Torah. But there are also those who are spiritually poor and are sold under sin to this day. Adam sold us out to sin. The ultimate return to the original ownership is getting us back to the status that Adam had before he fell in the Garden of Eden. His fall made each and every one of us sinners. As a result, people are broken. They are broken-hearted. They are captives. They are captives to whatever sin they are committing, as well as what they're put under bosses and slave labour within our communities to this very day. They are blind to the truth, and many are bruised by so-called believers in this world. When Yeshua was revealed in Luke, he began by reading about how his coming fulfilled the year of Yovel. People would return to the state that Yah placed us in way back in Adam's time, when he placed Adam in the Garden of Eden with blessings and dominion and everlasting life. That's what was meant for Adam and Hava. But we were sold. So the entire writings of the apostles, or the New Testament, is simply the proclamation that everything mankind lost when he was sold under sin in the days of Adam is restored once again. The Torah rulings of the people and lands in regards to the Yovel said the people and the land could be restored. But we are like the man who owed 10,000 talents to a master and he couldn't pay him back in Matityahu chapter 18. Yehovah forgave us as though a year of Yovel occurred. We couldn't pay the price required for our sins. It was too much. We owed a debt we couldn't pay. We needed someone to redeem us and wash away our sins. And that could only be Yeshua HaMashiach. Every time someone preaches or speaks the gospel message, it is as though a silver trumpet of Yovel sounds, saying, come back to Eden. In other words, get eternal life through faith that Adam could get through the fruit of the tree of life. Silver was always associated with redemption. If you recall, it was 30 pieces of silver that Yehuda Iscariot was paid for Yeshua to be taken and crucified. And his crucifixion paid the price to redeem each and every one of us. What is interesting is the 50th in Hebrew is Shavuot, which is coming up shortly. Can we go to next slide, please? In Acts 2 and verse 1, the festival of Shavuot arrived and the believers all gathered together in one place. There is the day of Shavuot, which was 50 days after the Shabbat following the Feast of First Fruits, the day Yeshua was resurrected. But in Vayikra, Leviticus 23:15-17, it says, from the day after the day of rest, that is from the day you bring the sheaf of waiting, you are to count 7 full weeks. Until the day after the 7th week, you are to count 50 days. You are to present a new grain offering to Yehovah. You must bring bread from your homes for waving, 2 loaves made from 1 gallon of fine flour baked with leaven, as first fruits for Yehovah. That is the day of Shavuot. But the year of Yovel is the 50th year. So there is a year of Shavuot. I have already shown you where Yeshua referred to the entire gospel age as the year of favor of Yehovah. So the entire gospel age is actually the Shavuot age. True Shavuot experience, or Pentecost experience, whatever you want to call it, in English, is to return all that Adam lost. Pentecost was never meant to be a denomination. It's an experience. It's an experience that occurred in Acts chapter 2, and it's an experience Yehovah wants every person of every denomination to have the Shavuot experience. He wants you to have it. The next slide, please. It says in Acts 2 and verse 39, "For all the promise is for you, for your children, and for those far away, as many as Yehovah Elohim may call." And in chapter 2 and verse 4, it says, "They were all filled with the Ruach HaKodesh and began to talk in different languages as the Ruach enabled them to speak." So let us recap. There was a weekly Shabbat day, a Shabbat that occurred every 7 days, which we do every Shabbat we are here. The seventh day of the week was Shabbat. But the day of Shavuot was the 50th day. So it is a special Shabbat coming up this month. So the 50th year is a Shavuotal year. So how many Shabbat years come between the year of Yovel? If we go to the next slide, it says in Vayikra Leviticus 25 and verse 8, "You are to count 7 Shabbats of years, 7 times 7 years, that is 49. Between each Yovel year were 7 Shabbat years, and that would bring you to the 50th year of Yovel. As I said, the last Shabbat year before the 50th year was the 49th year, which was the 7th Shabbat year since the last Yovel. Now every 7 years the land rested. That meant that the 49th year and the 50th year were 2 years of rest in a row. So the 50th year, as I said, also counts as number one for the next 49. So let us now go to Vayikra Leviticus 25, 4 and 5. It says, "But in the 7th year is to be a Shabbat year of complete rest for you, rest for the land, Shabbat for Yehovah. You will neither sow your field nor prune your grapevines. You are not to harvest what grows by itself from the seeds left by your previous harvest. You are not to gather the grapes of your untended vines. It is to be a complete rest for the land." And then we get to the Yovel year in Vayikra 25:11. "The 50th year will be a Yovel for you. In that year you are not to sow, harvest what grows by itself, or that gather the grapes of untended vines." So the 49th and 50th years, 2 years in a row, they once again had a double portion of blessing of crops. A double portion of a double portion. A Shabbats of Shabbats. They had 2 rows in years in a row of no sowing, no reaping, no land tax, no utility costs. 2 years from working the land meant 2 years of family life enjoying the fruit of your previous labour. How refreshed they would have been and felt when they had to get back to sowing, harvesting and tending their vines on that next year. Wouldn't it be great if we could have a year off every 7 years? How refreshed we would feel. And it's good for the land to be rested that year because it allows it to replenish itself so the crops can grow. The firstborn son in the Hebrew life always received a double portion of land compared to all the other sons of a man's family. Elisha asked for a double portion of Eliyahu's anointing and power, and Eliyahu told him it would only be so if he saw Eliyahu ascend into heaven. Eliyahu saw it, and Elisha saw it, and Eliyahu's mantle fell on him, and he received the double portion. Yehovah made provision through redemption and Yovel to ensure that we could return to have our dominion over our own lives. We can only know like we know that we have that if we live our lives in obedience to Yehovah's Torah and knowledge through immersion that Yeshua's death on the stake and his resurrection gave us, knowing that he is sitting at the right hand of the Father, interceding for us, and that's what gives us our double portion. Because Yeshua is doing it for us. We need to live out our lives in authority over all things, including all fears and worries. The reason that Israel, the people of Israel, lost the promised land was because they were worshipping to other gods, because they weren't resting the land, because they weren't observing Torah. They were never ever meant to lose that land. But they did because they didn't observe and obey Yehovah's word. It's up to us. If we want to keep on observing and obeying his word, or whether we want to lose our right to have Yeshua intercede for us. If we fall by the wayside and go back into the world and sin like we did before we knew him, that's exactly what will happen. We will lose everything. It's up to us if we want dominion over all things, if we want to stand in faith and accept Yeshua as interceding on our behalf and we seated with him at the right hand of the Father, or whether we want to deny it. It's going to be harder and harder in each year from this day onwards, especially since gay marriage has been accepted in Australia, because we no longer will be able to profess our faith like we used to without being vilified. There's nothing that calls you heterophobic, but you can be called homophobic. The heterophobic word has never been used. We have to stand for what we believe in, and we have to know, like we know, that the price is going to be paid. One, Yeshua's paid it for us. It doesn't matter what happens. We have dominion. We have dominion over all things, and it's up to us whether we, each person individually, whether we live our lives according to that, or whether we bow down to what is in the world today. We are in the world, but we're not of it. And we can give that thanks to Yeshua HaMashiach for that. So let us now go to the remembrance service, because without Yeshua, we have nothing.